Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm. As expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Miles of black ribbon on the lone highway. Men turn into boys on the lone highway. Rest up creeps fly on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. On the lone highway.
Alright, Revolution Radio, it's Saturday, and it's time for the Scorpio Conspiracy Show with your host, Scorpio.
Lost a little honey on the lone highway.
Hello and welcome to the Scorpio Conspiracy Show. Today's date is Saturday, August 8th, 2020. And welcome to the free-range open-air insane asylum we call Earth. Yes, welcome to Corona Palooza, a 24-hour-a-day non-stop fear festival with all of your favorite stars chipping away at your sense of safety and well-being. The very act of breathing has become a dangerous activity. Walking down the street is now a hero's journey, or so they want us to think. We've gone from rebel without a cause to rebel without a mask. Yes, the act of walking down the street without a face covering, a talisman of compliance and submission, has become an act of defiance and civil disobedience. The long-forgotten speakeasies from the days of prohibition are now re-emerging in this modern world. An inconspicuous boarded-up building now houses a covert world of pleasure, of mixed drinks and forbidden social interaction. Just behind the steel door, with a small slit near the top, a guard stands at attention, posted behind it. Don't forget your password or they won't let you in. Clinton body count and Arkanside are two secret passwords that have been rumored to work in the past. But this time, it's not the alcohol that's illegal. No, it's the dreaded social interaction that must be stopped at all costs. If people get together and start talking, uncomfortable questions might be asked, along with some uncomfortable conclusions about the state of reality being hoisted onto the consciousness of humanity. The nightly news should be renamed the Nightly Doomcast, because all they do now is peddle doom and fear, with a nice side helping of Trump hate. Whether you love Trump or hate him, his presidency has proved one thing for certain. The power of the president isn't anything significant compared to the power of the deep state and their agenda that perpetually keeps rolling along with the help of their mockingbird minions embedded within the mainstream media. But don't worry. Groping Joe and his communist minions are going to fix things. Yes, communist minions whose marionette strings are controlled by a shadowy elite globalist cabal who prefers to remain nameless, if you know what I mean. Yes, Groping Joe, along with a black female vice president running mate. Yes, no matter her qualifications or ideological beliefs, that's no longer important. What matters is that she's a black female. Oh, yes. Preferably a lesbian, maybe, too. That'd be even a bigger plus, huh? Yeah, okay. Of course, unless Groping Joe makes the precarious decision to pull a surprise and pick Hillary Clinton as his running mate, which I highly doubt now, despite the claims by many that Hillary has been running a genius stealth campaign for president. It's so stealth you don't even know it's happening. But in the unlikely case that Groping Joe makes the unwise decision to nominate Hillary, I recommend that Joe avoid fatty foods, small airplanes, hot tubs, and steep staircases. Yes, a world-class food taster might be in order as well, just to be on the safe side. Well, that said, I'd like to bring on my co-host, Giuseppe, from the District of Criminals. How you doing, man?
I'm just firmly gripping my talisman, trying to get through another day. I'm good. How are you?
Good. I hope you're taking a knee and got your mask on, you know.
I even have a mask for my mask, of course.
I've actually seen people with two masks on. I guess they just want to be double sure.
Yeah, it's pretty nutty. I was taking my eldest Siberian Husky, we have three, to the vet for a laser acupuncture, working on her spine to keep her strong. And her reward after that is we go for a walk along a creek here outside the District of Criminals, and she loves it, and saw this young woman in really great shape, matching black shorts, jogger, black top, and black mask. Beautiful sunny day in the low to mid-80s early on in the day, and wearing that mask, so sad.
It is sad, and what's really bizarre is I've seen people like actually strutting around with the fancy mask. Like they have like the Y-shaped mask with the dual filters, you know, and it's like, I got the deluxe mask with all the bells and whistles, you know. It's just pride of ownership, you know. It's pathetic.
Man, it is really pathetic. And I saw on Twitter right before I joined you that evidently Joe Biden told Fox News he has chosen his running mate. And I think you're absolutely right. Probably going to be Kamala Harris, because she went and had that plastic surgery a week or two ago. And why would you do that unless you're primping for something big?
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow, we got some secret intel coming on the show here.
Yeah, breaking news.
Wow, she had plastic surgery. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, there's amazing side-by-side comparisons of the week before.
Oh.
Her face looked normal. And then this was last week I saw this, where everything is super tight and pulled back. You know, that classic facelift, literally.
Oh, yeah. You can't barely move her mouth anymore. Well, that's good. And, you know, it's so funny how she made her big stand on the debates about busing. Like, that's a pressing issue that, yeah, I want more busing. And, you know, I just remember when I was a kid in seventh and eighth grade, when I was in Texas, people used to live in fear of being bused to one of the bad schools, you know, because, you know, you were in for a year of hell at a school full of people that hated you. But somehow that was a wonderful thing. And that's what people are thinking about today.
Yeah. Busing destroyed so many good neighborhoods. And I lived it in Milwaukee when I was a young boy in the late 60s. And then they implemented that all in the early 70s, and it went from a really stable, nice neighborhood to a war zone that people were desperate to get out of within the span of like 5 years. It was so sad. And that's happened in almost every major city, and it was rather intentional. And I don't even understand why she's bringing up busing. That has been around, 50 years plus. I mean, why is that need to be an issue now. I don't get
it. Well, I think she was playing the victim card. Like, look, here's, I was a downtrodden, you know, black woman, and the government saved me by busing me to a different school. And, you know, it's just, you know, the social engineers working their magic upon society and really just destroying people's neighborhoods and people's individual lives, all for the greater good, don't you know?
The amusing element to Kamala Harris, other than she's a nasty personality, is that she used to use her formidable fellatio skills on Downtown Willie Brown when he was the head of the state government, and then she was taking care of Downtown until she amassed enough power, and then she cast him aside. I mean, this is like a bad TV soap opera, this woman's story.
Oh, yes, yes. And, you know, apparently she's not well liked by the people that work with her in San Francisco. And she had the nasty habit of, she put a lot of people in jail for marijuana offenses back in the day, as they say. So, yeah, we'll see. That's very interesting. Basement 5 is saying that Joe Biden sniffed out his vice presidential running mate. So. He sniffed her out. Yeah.
He had a good one. He had the finalists kneel down and he sniffed the hair of each one, and then he knew the right one at that point.
Oh yeah, that, there you go. That's actually probably how he did it. Yeah, at least based on that.
Yeah.
And it's incredible how this is the first presidential campaign run from somebody's basement. it's really amazing.
It is amazing. I mean, holy cow. The you would think the Democrats would have, and this is a question I'm going to also ask James Tracy when he comes on in an hour, is you would have thought anyone with half a brain would have grabbed a young, charismatic, futuristic, hopeful candidate similar to what John F. Kennedy was in 1960 and run him against Trump and the corruption surrounding the current government. And they would have won by landslide. And instead, Biden, oh my God, it makes no sense to me. It still doesn't. I mean, holy cow.
Well, I see it, what you're saying, but if you look at it from a different perspective, it kind of makes sense because, you know, Gropin Joe is really connected to the Clinton cabal. So we've got the Clinton influence working, you know, pulling the levers behind the curtain. And in some ways, Joe Biden is the perfect candidate for today's government. He's highly corrupt. He's old, so he has a short shelf life. And he'll pretty much go along with anything he's told because he doesn't usually know what state he's even in. So if you look at it from that perspective, he's actually a great candidate, and he probably won't live very long, which means we'll have a black female president in the very near future. And if you don't like anything she does, you're a misogynistic racist. How about that?
Well, your scenario is very believable to me as well. I guess in some ways I still yearn for a Democratic Party that actually represented to a decent extent the working and middle class like it did in the 50s and 60s. And that's a long gone. You're absolutely right. So I'm being too much of an idealist, certainly.
That is sad because, you know, I can remember in the days of my youth that the Democrat Party did make at least an effort to represent the working people, the working class. Now, of course, they support open borders, and you cannot support the same things because the two things simultaneously, because open borders is really just a race to the bottom for labor. And it's a sad state of affairs that, you know, they're just going to sell out the working class people because, let's face it, you know, they're all taking donations from the oligarchy now.
Yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. The it's funny that yesterday's guest on The Perfect Triangle, the great John Q. Publius, I didn't get to ask the question, but he describes the illegal workers as the opiate of the dying state. And I think that's so true. that, I mean, it's just a cheap way to destroy the foundation of your nation, to steal living wage jobs away, to, you know, sink people into a morass of hopelessness, and which comes with drug abuse, alcohol abuse, violence. It's so obvious that it could be so much more, but the greedy types who want this, they don't care. They guts theirs. They don't care about anybody else, sadly.
Yeah, and, you know, as we were saying on the show yesterday, this is really a consolidation of power, and it's an economic event much more so than a health event. And they're really just hiding behind this, keeping people in fear so they don't think about what's actually happening. So right. I don't know. I just think I see this as a last ditch effort to hold on to power as they've had it. And, you know, they're already talking about this global reset, which really, again, is another last-ditch effort to sort of shore up the system as it is, and most importantly, keep their money and their power. And, well, you may hit some hyperinflation yourself, but, you know, if you got $20 billion, what difference does it make?
I'm not so sure that this is a last-ditch effort to hold on to power. To me, it seems like this is a malicious all-in effort to fundamentally transform how globalism controls everything and destroy the sovereign nation known as the United States, and meld this country into some type of European-like union, the North American consortium or what have you, and then the dollar's destroyed, the new digital currency, the contact tracing, all the horrific things we've discussed in weeks past. I think they're going for that. I don't think they're trying to hold on to what they have. I think they want to ratchet it up like 20 notches.
Well, no, actually, that's a good clarification. I was really referring to more that I feel that there's a sense of fear within the people that run and own the system. And the fear is that people are starting to evolve a little bit and get to a different state of consciousness. So they're taking a wrecking ball to all of it as quickly as they can to keep their globalist empire afloat.
Oh, on the spiritual plane. Yeah, absolutely. There's some grand changes going on energetically, and I think you're absolutely right. It really causes them great consternation. And I agree with you from that perspective, without a doubt.
Yeah. So
speaking of fear, should we begin to finish up with the great Dr. Donegan and the New Order of Barbarians?
Yes, let's do that, because for those of you who may have missed it last week, we played an extensive set of clips from the New Order of Barbarians, which was the revelations given to Dr. Richard Donegan in 1969. While he was attending a pediatric doctor's conference, and he was expecting to hear, you know, the usual kind of doctorally talk, but a doctor, Richard Day, gave this very surprising speech that essentially laid out the plans by a very powerful covert cabal to alter society and steer it into a direction of their choosing.
Right. This was 1969. He was hypothesizing, Day was, that, not hypothesizing, sharing the plan to pretty much destroy society by the turn of a century. And it's the things he describes, the massive changes, really, it's taken a little longer. As we discussed last week, they needed some type of massive mind control operant trauma, that being 9/11, to push forward to what they're doing now. And so here we're going to go with there's about 14-15 minutes of clips left, and we'll discuss each one. And let me know, just chirp up that you can hear this. Here we go.
Oh, okay. And I just want to make a quick announcement that at the top of the following hour, we'll be welcoming Dr. James Tracy onto the show to discuss the state of academia and what's happened to him because of his viewpoints on Sandy Hook, as well as some other controversial topics. So that's for the next hour.
He's a real hero.
Yeah, Giuseppe, where do you want to start off with the clips here? You got it all queued up?
Yep, we're all set. Here, just let me know you can hear it.
Okay.
Discussion of terrorism. Terrorism would be used widely in Europe and other parts of the world. Terrorism at that time was felt would not be necessary in the United States. It possibly could become necessary if the United States did not move rapidly enough into accepting the system. But at least in the foreseeable future, it was not planned and very benignly on their part. Oh, maybe terrorism would not be required here. Implication being that it would be indeed used if it was necessary. Along with a little bit of a scolding that Americans have had it too good anyway, and just a little bit of terrorism would help convince Americans that the world indeed is a dangerous place, or can if we don't relinquish control to the proper authorities.
Oh, wow, that's really amazing. Talking about the use of terrorism as a way to move the agenda along back in 1969, it must have really blown Richard Donegan's mind as a young man. It must have changed his life forever to hear this speech. And, you know, the other thing about this, these clips and why I think this new order of barbarians is so relevant right now is that, you know, it actually goes into the concept of medical tyranny. So here we're talking about medical tyranny and terrorism back in 1969.
So two shocking points in 1969. One, nobody even used the word terrorism, and Day says it's going to be used as a tool, which ironically in 1987 or 88, Benjamin Netanyahu gave his famous introductory speech coming out as a player for the Israeli nation, talking about terrorism is in our future and it threatens America and it threatens Europe and it threatens the world, right? So 20 years later that they roll it out. And the other thing that is so shocking and disturbing is in 69, they're saying Americans have it too good and they need to be scared into giving up what they have. Just so evil.
Yeah, and you know what's the other thing that's interesting about this Dr. Richard Day talking about the use of terrorism to move an agenda along? It implicitly implies that they had control of these terrorist groups and that they had created them and funded them and were able to you know steer them into whatever direction they needed.
Yeah. Everything is synthetic. Nothing just happens organically. Everything is there's just like the shocking video a couple months ago in Minneapolis when the operative, be it CIA, deep state, was holding an umbrella and smashing windows, a white spook type, and some local black woman started, don't do that, and he just looked at her, smirked a little bit, kept smashing windows, holding his umbrella, which is the classic sign that it's an op, and then walked away. And so always these things are managed. There is no event in the last, I don't know, forever that just happens. It's always controlled, I believe.
Well, yeah, and here, obviously, you know, they wouldn't be talking about being able to use terrorism as a tool unless they had control over it. And to hear such talk in 1969, it must have been like, you know, science fiction or you know, it must have sounded like, you know, delusional fantasy on some level.
Well, if you think back to 1969, you know, they had a big meal. They're drinking, you know, a lot of cocktailing. These young guys are, you know, feeling their oats, right? They're out of medical school. They've got their board certifications. They're in practice now. They're like, you know, the young guns, right? And then, so they got a little buzz. They got their bellies full and they're sitting there probably a lot of smoking and cigar stuff, manly men stuff of the 1969 time frame, and all of a sudden the professor, the older guy, drops this bomb of reality, real knowledge, dark knowledge on him. I can't imagine how they'd even process it, and that's probably another reason why so many of them didn't remember it, but luckily Donegan did. And to his
that is interesting that he even states that a lot of these guys just didn't even remember, or like, oh, I think I remember something like that, but you know, it's like they just had to wipe it out of their memory. It was just too much to take. But with Dr. Donegan, a seed was planted, and then I'm sure it changed the whole trajectory of his life to some degree.
Yeah, he became a devout Catholic after that.
Yeah.
Should we go on to the next one then?
Yeah, we got about 2 minutes till the bottom of the hour. Let's go ahead and hit it. Yeah.
Okay.
There was discussion of money and banking. One statement was inflation is infinite. You can put an infinite number of zeros after any number and put the decimal points wherever you want. This is an indication that inflation is a tool of controllers. Money would become predominantly credit. It was already money is primarily a credit thing, but exchange of money would be not cash or upable things, but electronic credit signals. Money only in very small amounts for things like chewing gum and candy bars, just pocket sorts of things. Any purchase of would be done electronically. Things would be electronically entered into your account. There would be a single banking system. It may have the appearance of being more than one, but ultimately, basically, it would be one single banking system. When you got paid, your pay would be entered for you into your account balance, and then when you purchased anything at the point of purchase, it would be deducted from your account balance, and you would actually carry nothing with you. Also, computer records can be kept of whatever it was you purchased, so that if you were purchasing too much of any particular item, wanted to know what you were doing with your money, they could go back and review your purchases and determine what it was you were buying. There was a statement to the effect that any purchase of significant size, like an automobile, a bicycle, a refrigerator, a radio, a television, or whatever, might be have some sort of identification on it where it could be traced, so that very quickly anything which was either given away or stolen, authorities would be able to establish who purchased it and when. Computers would allow this to happen. The ability to save would be greatly curtailed. People would just not be able to save any considerable degree of wealth. There's a statement of recognition that wealth represents power, and wealth in the hands of a lot of people is not good for the people in charge.
Oh, wow. So we go from terrorism to talking about essentially a digital currency and the removal of cash from the system.
And that draining the wealth, because wealth equals power. And once again, he thought it was going to happen. Donegan claimed Day was said this was all targeted for the end of the 20th century, but they realized they needed that massive trauma, false flag, 9/11, to grease these skids, and we're literally seeing it going on right now. That's the whole point of the Great Reset, right?
Yes. And it's interesting how earlier in the tape, Donegan even said that they plan to enter the 21st century with a flying start. I thought that was an interesting choice of words.
Yeah, right. It's just by accident, I'm sure.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that was interesting about this clip is that the idea that you can just move decimal points around and, you know, it doesn't really matter. It's just numbers on a screen and decimal points, and you can make as much as you want. It really shows you, you know, their perspective of what money is versus, you know, we've been indoctrinated to think, oh, money is so important and it buys things and you have to save and earn it and blah, blah, blah. To them, it's just, you know, decimal points and numbers on a screen.
And it's funny. I remember when I was a little boy, man, you had to keep track of your checking account and balance it yourself. And it was a big deal. And if it didn't add up, you had to get a statement print out from the bank, and it was a lot of work. And now it's all just digital zeros and ones. And even back then, we were still on the gold standard. So holy cow, what a change now. Where now the globalist parasites get to swing their chicken over their head and add another 100 trillion to the economy with nothing back in it. Just insane.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy. And you know, he goes on to talk about this a chip, you know, will be used. First, it'll just be one card. You don't need to have all these different credit cards, just one. And then of course he didn't know that there'd be, you know, cell phones, where that might be an intermediate stage where everything is done with your cell phone to pay and you know, all that. And then of course he even talks about an implanted chip, a silicon chip that was being planned in 1969.
So dark, so devious, has to be guided by just pure evil, otherworldly forces. There's no way that any humans could have cooked this all up that many years ago.
I think you said on a previous show that these conspirators are working outside of time. And I thought that was very well said, because it implies that they're working from a different, you know, ether or field of consciousness than human beings are.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, as we discussed last week, and I gave that example of up until the last two or three years, all quantum test where he took some of his blood, kept it alive, put a little bit of it on a plane, stimulated the live blood in the laboratory, and instantaneously the blood on the airplane, which was about 500 miles away and moving further away by the second. Amazingly clever way to prove what we knew, that the ether, or in my medicine, oriental medicine, the chi, the energy that's everywhere, is all linked. It's just these meat bot shells we're in are so limiting compared to what's really going on.
Wow, that's an interesting perspective. Yeah, I totally agree. Okay, well, why don't we go on with the next clip? We're already past the bottom of the hour.
Electronic payments initially would all be based on different kinds of credit cards. These were already in use in 1969 to some extent, not as much as now. But people would have credit cards with the electronic strip on it. And once they got used to that, then it would be pointed out the advantage of having all of this combined into a single credit card serving a single monetary system. And then you don't have to carry around all that plastic. So the next step would be the single card. And then the next step would be to replace the single card with a skin implant. The single card could be lost or stolen, give rise to problems, could be exchanged with somebody else to confuse identity. The skin implant, on the other hand, would be not losable or counterfeitable or transferable to another person. So you and your accounts would be identified without any possibility of error. The skin implant, of course, would have to be put somewhere that was convenient to the scanner, for example, your right hand or your forehead. At that time when I heard this, I was unfamiliar with the statements in the Book of Revelation. The speaker went on to say, now some of you people who read the Bible will attach significance to this, to the Bible, But he went on to disclaim any biblical significance at all. This is just common sense of how the system could work and should work. And there's no need to read any superstitious biblical principles into it. As I say, at the time, I was not very familiar with the shortly after that, I became familiar with him, and the significance of what he said really was striking. I'll never forget it. There was some mention also of implants that would lend themselves to surveillance by providing radio signals. This could be under the skin or a dental implant put in like a filling so that either fugitives or possibly every citizen could be identified by a certain frequency from his personal transmitter and could be located at any time or in any place by any authority who wanted to find him. This would be particularly useful if somebody broke out of prison.
Wow. You know, Giuseppe, if I didn't know better, I'd think that these people were working with a much more advanced technology than they were letting on to the public. What do you think about that?
I think that that is absolutely right, Scorpio. And I also just dawned on me that the masks are the training wheels to get people prepared for being injected with that little tracker device, which we know will do a lot more than just track these days.
Oh, that's well said. Training wheels, your training wheel mask. Yes. It's all part of, accepting the idea that the government has the power to force you to wear something over your face and then force you to have a needle jabbed in your arm and then force you to ultimately have a chip to purchase anything.
I saw a poll results released last night that states 42% of the polled respondents would take the coronavirus, which I'm surprised it's that high. I would guess as it comes closer and as more people grok the fact that 100% of all testees got sick, and the higher the dose, the more sicker the testee became, why would anybody take that vaccine?
Yes, I've already decided I'm donating my vaccine to charity because I'm that kind of guy.
Oh, man, what a big heart. No wonder I love you so much. There you go.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, before we move on, I think I'd like just to very quickly give a shout out to the people in the chat room. We've got Jody, Stardust Man, Ken, Strong Delusion. That's a good name. Greenheart 1, Fact or Theory. Basement 5, Snippets, Plant Manager, Zippy 101, Lady Horse, Mona Radler, Marcus, Captain Fred, Mayor Bailey, Vet JD, and Boy Solomon. So we'll be keeping an eye on that, looking for insightful comments. And I liked your little training wheel analogy, because that really is, it's sort of like behavioral modification and getting people used to grander concepts that they're not quite yet aware of.
Yeah, it's really tragic how weak-minded the citizens of most countries are, and that they just go along to get along to go along, which I can understand, because a vast majority of people, even in the Western world these days, the first world, are wage slaves living check to check. I mean, if you're lucky enough to be beyond that, you've done pretty well for yourself, because, you know, what is it, something like 90% of the Western world lives check to check these days. So it's too bad.
Well, and that's partly due to massive inflation that's been dripped out very slowly like an IV onto society. I used to collect these old Desert magazines from the 1960s and 1970s, and there was an ad for a 1965 Mustang, brand new Mustang, for $3,500.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the it's sad that the federal government, which should be 120-pound Rottweiler, totally threatening the globalists, the corporatists, and championing we the citizens, and preventing things like hyperinflation, preventing things like deadly vaccinations, toxic chemicals sprayed on our food like Monsanto and the whole glyphosate nightmare. Yeah. Instead, Monsanto, though,
that's pretty good.
Right on. Instead, well, though, we have the federal government is a 4-pound teacup chihuahua constantly licking the hand of the invading globalists and nipping at its own citizens' heels. This government is an embarrassment.
Oh, yes. I wish it was only an embarrassment. Very good wording on that, the teacup chihuahua. That gives a real visual. Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that's interesting is on the previous show, we played the clip where Dr. Day mentioned that there was going to be new diseases that were to be unleashed, onto society. And, of course, every time Dr. Dunnigan had a case that was difficult to diagnose, he started to wonder, well, is this one of these new diseases he was talking about? And, you know, fast forward to today, here we are with a new disease, supposedly.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the new disease that intrepid investigators have tracked for at least 7 years, that's been funded by teeny tiny Tony the Rat Fauci and paid for development in labs in first Frederick, Maryland. Then it moved to Madison, Wisconsin. Then it moved to North Carolina, the Research Triangle Park. And then when Trump and his people had the good sense to outlaw these bioweapons, Fauci moved the development to none other than Wuhan, China. Jeez, what a series of unrelated events, right?
Oh, it's all one big coincidence, Giuseppe. And it's also a coincidence that Dr. Fauci is worth about $500 million now due to his investments in vaccines and laboratory tests. Not bad work if you can find it, huh?
Yeah. The whole idea of this – oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say that most people don't realize that the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, is not a federal agency. At best, it's a hybrid, and Fauci himself owns the patents on, I don't know, I think it's some crazy number, like 30 or 70 vaccines, and he co-patents with the people who actually develop it. So talk about vulgar, enormous conflicts of interest. But
he's been feathering his own nest since what, 1981 or something like that. It's really quite incredible.
Yeah, I saw last night that teeny tiny Tony was whining that he and his family are getting a lot of death threats these days. I'm like, I wonder why.
Well, that's a shocker.
I wonder why. Yeah.
Yeah, but then at the same time, the media is saying how popular and his poll numbers are very high. He's very well liked by the general public. But Trump, he's not well liked. So there you go.
He's America's Uncle Mangala, even though was not what he is made out to be. So
there you go. Okay, well, we've only got about less than 15 minutes, so let's play another clip and see what we got.
There was more discussion of personal surveillance. One thing was said, you'll be watching television and somebody will be watching you at the same time at a central monitoring station. Television sets would have a device to enable this. The TV set would not have to be on in order for this to be operative. Also, the television set can be used to monitor what you are watching. People can tell what you're watching on the TV and how you're reacting to what you're watching. You would not know that you were being watched while you were watching your television. Into their homes? Well, people would buy them. when they buy their own television. They won't know that they're on there at first. This was described as being by what we now know as cable TV to replace antenna TV. When you buy a TV set, this monitor would just be a part of the set, and most people would not have enough knowledge of electronics to know it's there in the beginning. And the cable would be the means of carrying the surveillance message to the monitor. People found out that this monitoring was going on, they would also be already very dependent upon television for a number of things. Just the way people are dependent on the telephone today, one thing the television would be used for would be purchases. You wouldn't have to leave your home to purchase. You just turn on your TV, and there would be a way of interacting with the television channel to the store that you wanted to purchase, and you could flip the switch from place to place to choose a refrigerator or clothing. This would be both convenient, but it also would make you dependent on the television, so that the built-in monitor, something could not do without. There was some discussion of audio monitors too, just in case the authorities wanted to hear what was going on in rooms other than where the television monitor was. And in regard to this, the statement was made, any wire going into your house, for example, your telephone wire could be used this way. I remember this in particular because it was fairly near the end of the presentation, and as we were leaving the meeting place, I said something to one of my colleagues about going home and pulling all the wires out of the house, except that I knew I couldn't get by without the telephone. The colleague I spoke to just seemed numb. He, to this day, I don't think he even remembers what we talked about or what we heard that time, because I've asked him. But at that time, he seemed stunned.
Wow. Well, you know, what comes to my mind is Amazon. You use your television to order everything from a refrigerator to whatever. And then, of course, smart appliances, you know. Your toaster is going to be hooked up to the internet for your convenience.
Yeah, the internet of all things. What reminded me when he said I wanted to pull all the wires out of the house was that excellent. I'm a big Gene Hackman, the actor fan. And he did that movie about, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago called Enemy of the State with young child rapist Will Smith. And that was such a good movie when they come to the realization how much power the intelligence agencies had to monitor your every move. And it's funny that they knew that and could do it back in 1969. It's, wow. Amazing.
Yeah, it's almost like if I didn't know better, the technology was already all in place. They just had to decide on a timeline as to how and when to roll out this technology.
Yeah, I mean, they don't operate in a vacuum. There's a lot of good people who have resisted this, and I think that's why it all got delayed for the huge operant trauma of 9/11. And had people been a little weaker-willed and a little less spiritual, especially the Catholics and the Christians of the nation back then, they would have pulled this all off probably by the end of the century. But they realized it wasn't going to work, and then they had to do the heinous false flag 9/11, which interestingly delivered the Patriot Act, which none other than Groper Joe Biden had authored months before 9/11. What a coincidence that is.
It wasn't one of those 1,000-page documents that nobody could possibly read.
Yes, but Groper Joe was the lead lackey on that.
Well, he was burning the midnight oil on his manual typewriter, listening to his record player, typing up the protocols for the Patriot Act.
The stopping only to step outside, stretch his legs, and sniff the hair of an 8-year-old girl.
Well, Well, we all have to have a hobby, Giuseppe. Come on.
Yes, we do.
It's just amazing, too, you know, the hypocrisy in this whole thing. If some conservative figure had done anything remotely like, you know, being filmed, you know, 20 different times sniffing little girls' hair, can you imagine the outrage? He would have been crucified in the town square. But here, it's no big deal. Groping Joe, he's just friendly. That's all.
He's a friendly guy. Yeah, I mean, there's one video I've seen dozens of times where this little girl is, I don't know, 8 years old, and he's reaching with his right hand trying to get his pinky there to touch her breast and nipple area. It's just, and then she kind of brushes him away. I mean, what? Hey, President Groper, it could be coming. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Is that this clip where the little girl's standing there with her parents?
Right. They were the swearing in where he was vice president then. Yeah. And they do each one individually. They all come up the family. It's a big honor for them.
Yeah. And it's kind of sad because the little girl looks up at her mother like, hey, this creepy old guy is trying to touch me. Do something. And of course, you know, the mother has to ignore it because, you know, this is their big moment in the sun. And of course, Groping Joe knew that. So being the predator he is, he pounced on the situation.
Well, that's the excitement. A true addict like that tries to create adrenal charged situations where, oh, if he got caught and the newly sworn in senator punched him in the jaw, it would destroy my career. But I can't resist. I've got to try and do it in public. I mean, they're such sick, addicted lowlifes. That's all they are.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess we have time for one more clip, so why don't we crank it out and then make a few comments, and then we'll be at the top of the hour, ready for Dr. James Tracy.
Privately owned housing would become a thing of the past. Cost of housing and financing housing would gradually be made so high that most people can afford it. People who already own their houses would be allowed to keep them, but as years go by, it would be more and more difficult for young people to buy a house. Young people would more and more become renters, particularly in apartments or condominiums. More and more unsold houses would stand vacant. People just couldn't buy them. But the cost of housing would not come down. You'd right away think, well, the vacant house, the price will come down, people will buy it. But there was some statement that to the effect that the price would be held high, even though there was many of them available, so that free marketplaces would not operate. People would not be able to buy these, and gradually more and more of the population would be forced into small apartments which would not accommodate very many children. Then as the number of real homeowners diminished, they would become a minority. There would be no sympathy for them from the majority who dwelled in apartments, and then these homes could be taken by increased taxes or other regulations that would be detrimental to home ownership and would be acceptable to the majority. Ultimately, people would be assigned where they would live, and it would be common to have non-family members living with you, just by you're not knowing just how far you could trust anybody. This would all be under the control of a central housing authority.
Wow. You know, the 2008 financial crisis comes to mind when he was talking about that, partially because, you know, so many houses were essentially empty and foreclosed upon, but somehow, miraculously, the prices didn't drop all that much.
Yeah, and how much does what he describes sound like the Agenda 2030, the UN's insidious plan to force millions upon millions into the cities and live like rats in a rat's nest.
In a stack and pack, yeah. But, you know, one strange, you know, side effect of this Operation Corona is that that's going to be maybe more difficult because now people are afraid of the cities. There's too many virus-infected bags of flesh, also known as people. And so, you know, people don't want to live in big cities, at least right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's been an amazing rush of real estate. Every type of rural area is no matter what the condition of the house or no matter the cost, people are rolling their money, getting it out of wherever and getting it into something that they can control, which is and live in, which is real estate away from the cities. Because I think especially if the silent majority reelects Trump, there is going to be riots like we've never seen, and most of the major cities will be gutted, I think.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a hot time in the old town tonight, as they used to say. And, you know, recently I've watched a few videos of, you know, these guys that sort of just walk around New York City with their video camera, and Manhattan in particular. Saks Fifth Avenue is still all boarded up, basically a ghost town. It's quite shocking. And, you know, I just learned the other day that supposedly 10% of the gross national product of the United States comes from New York City. And New York City is not doing well.
I was listening to a local journalist on a podcast last week, and he observed that 100,000 businesses in New York City will never reopen, and that 500,000 people have fled the city already, the wealthier ones never coming back. So it's only going to get worse.
Yeah, especially because I don't think they have any plans on shutting down Operation Corona anytime in the near future. All indications point to they're going to keep going into next year. Okay, there we are at the music. Next hour, we're going to have Dr. James Tracy, so stay tuned.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.